Hey there, eco heroes! It's one of the trendiest foods on the wellness scene and takes pride of place in the center of most foodies' kitchen tables. But far from being the clean, natural product we're led to believe, it's actually quite the opposite. Today, I'm lifting the lid on Himalayan rock salt and I'm sharing why it's a condiment that's just not welcome at my kitchen table. Welcome to the Eco Chat podcast. I'm your host, Laura Trotter, and I'm here to show you how you can create an eco-ceptional life you love without compromising your lifestyle. Tune in for inspiring interviews with real-life eco heroes, plus my own theories, thoughts, and tips for sustainable living. I'm all about making green mainstream, and I'd love to help you on your eco journey. So let's get started. Just come back home from 3 fabulous days in Adelaide at the Transitions Film Festival, where I was really privileged to be on the panel of sustainability experts at the opening night last Friday night for the curtain raiser film, which was called 10 Billion, What's on Your Plate? A really good film that takes a look at where the agriculture industry is right now and where we're going to head in order to feed 10 billion people on our planet, which is what the population is tipped to become round about 2050. We're currently at about 7.5 billion people. So it was a really eye-opening film, and I can't wait to share some of my learnings from that film and some of the other films I watched over the weekend with you over coming months, and also bring some of the other sustainability experts I met in Adelaide onto this podcast to share some of their learnings and experience with you. It was truly an inspirational weekend. But I'm back home now, back in my day-to-day life with my kids and hubby. Thanks, Paul, for looking after the boys while I was away. And back in to talk about my topic for this week, which is a really exciting topic for me because I've had a bee in my bonnet about Himalayan rock salt for a few years now. And I've actually wanted to write and share this with you for a long time, but it just hadn't come out of me yet. So now it has come out. And it's time to share. But before I do start, I do have a really good freebie that ties in really well with this episode that you can get if you go to simpleswaps.lauratrotter.com. And I'll put that link below in iTunes. You can just click on that and go straight over there. And you'll get a free e-guide just called 10 Simple Swaps to Ego-Fire Your Pantry. So in this e-guide, I do go through 10 common items that are in our pantry, and I share a much more sustainable option for you to buy next time you run out of those products. So yeah, head over to simpleswaps.lauratrotter.com to get your free e-guide. But now, on today's topics. It never ceases to surprise me just how much the type of food has changed in one generation. Now, while the varieties of salt available haven't exploded to the same extent as coffee, milk, and bread, the types of salt on the market are a stark contrast to those when I was a kid growing up in the 1980s. Back then, it was table salt, and pretty much table salt alone. So sodium chloride, white, highly processed, small granules, end of story. Once I left home for university, I started experimenting more in the kitchen, and table salt was one of the first things I overhauled, surprisingly enough. I was waitressing at the flashiest function rooms at Flemington and Caulfield Racecourses in Melbourne in order to pay my way through uni, and I guess you could also say eat my way through uni, because one of the job perks was a restaurant quality meal with every long shift that I worked. Nevertheless, I got to eat some pretty amazing food as a student while I was working there, which was like a really big perk. But I digress. Inspired by some of the top chefs there, I started using sea salt flakes in my cooking, and I felt super gourmet because we are talking the mid-1990s here. Like the average person back then, I believe that salt for culinary purposes came from the sea and the sea alone. It wasn't until a field trip to the Murray-Darling Basin as part of my environmental geology unit to witness firsthand the impact of both dry land and wetland salinity in the region, did my awareness start to shift. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Murray-Darling Basin has traditionally been Australia's food bowl, but food production in the region has been impacted significantly over the past, I'd say 30 plus years, but it's much longer than that. It's probably more 40, 50 years. And it's really by salinity and water shortages as well. So including water wars between the four Australian states that the rivers flow through, but that's another story. So really water shortages, drought and salinity. So on this trip, and this was in the late 1990s, I think it might have been 96 or 97. But anyway, on this trip, we visited Ramsar listed wetlands that were under threat. So these are internationally acclaimed wetlands for wildlife in those wetlands. So they were under threat from salinity, at risk of losing their Ramsar classification. We visited farms struggling with salt-affected crops, massive areas of land that were officially dead due to being poisoned by salt, and also ancient creek beds that were lined with, you know, river red gums that were dying from the roots up due to the rising water table that was bringing ancient salts closer to the surface. So to say that the field trip was moving would be an understatement. But where there is adversity, there's always opportunity, and that was also apparent on this trip. Because we passed an area of land with large, pink, glistening stockpiles on it, and I learned that this was like a pilot area for extracting the ancient salts from the rising water table for the food market. So being the foodie that I am, I was intrigued and I kept my eye out for when I could actually buy this stuff because I'd never seen it in the shops before. But it was only a couple years later that I did spot this product in a gourmet food store, and it's been a staple in my home ever since. But what has all of this got to do with Himalayan rock salt, you ask? Well, nothing, of course, but everything as well. In recent years, there's been a lot of hype around Himalayan rock salt, primarily around its flavour and its reported health benefits. And sure, some of this attention is warranted. But if you live in Australia, eating Himalayan rock salt, it just doesn't make environmental sense, especially when there's a more sustainable salt that you should be consuming in its place. So here are the six reasons why Himalayan rock salt just isn't welcome at my dinner table. Number one, Himalayan rock salt is mined. Now, unlike artisan sea salt flakes that are extracted and evaporated from seawater, or Murray River salt flakes that are evaporated from naturally saline groundwater resources, Himalayan rock salt is extracted from a salt mine in Pakistan. It's not sourced from the pristine Himalayan mountains like the name implies. So this extraction process involves using conventional mining methods with their associated environmental impacts, including land disturbance and greenhouse gas emissions. So these methods are used to extract a non-renewable resource. Which leads me on to the next point. Point number two, Himalayan rock salt is a finite resource. It's non-renewable. So Himalayan rock salt is estimated to have formed 800 million years ago. Despite estimates that salt reserves are still in the millions of tons, once this resource has been depleted, it will be gone for good. This contrasts to sustainably sourced and produced sea salt flakes and Murray River salt flakes, which are extracted from a renewable resource, so it ain't going to run out anytime soon. Himalayan rock salt has huge food miles if you live in Australia. Of course, if you live in Pakistan, it makes total sense to be eating Himalayan rock salt, but in Australia, meh. So Pakistan is 11,000 kilometres away from where I live in Australia, which means it uses some serious food miles to transport Himalayan rock salt to my kitchen pantry. On the contrary, Murray River salt flakes are produced less than 1,000 kilometres away. Enough said. Point number four, Himalayan rock salt isn't the only mineral salt out there. Much of the appeal of Himalayan rock salt comes from the fact that it contains trace minerals like sulfur, magnesium, potassium, and calcium that just aren't present in sea salt. But here's the thing though, Murray River pink salt flakes are bursting with all of these minerals too. Point number five, Himalayan rock salt isn't the only pretty salt out there. Now I know the pink-orange colour sure has the wow factor and makes a statement on your kitchen table. I get it, I truly do, because I love surprising my guests with, you know, delicious meals that look nice too. But Murray River salt flakes are a gorgeous pink colour too. And point number six, Himalayan rock salt isn't the only tasty salt out there. Sure, Himalayan rock salt offers a flavour sensation that table salt can't match. But in my opinion, Murray River salt flakes are just as tasty. So if you do live in Australia, there just isn't a comparison. Murray River salt flakes are a total no-brainer. I love them because they're local and they help combat one of our country's most significant environmental issues, inland salinity. But they're also tasty and they look impressive too. So when will you make the switch? Of course, if you live outside Australia, eating Murray River salt flakes may not make environmental sense for you. So in your case, I'd suggest choosing a locally produced sea salt, such as like if you lived in the UK, the Maldon sea salt brand would make sense for you. And if you do have Himalayan rock salt in your pantry, by all means consume it before replacing it with a more sustainably sourced salt. Food waste alone makes up around 40% of the household waste stream, so please don't waste what you already have in your possession. Now, I thought this was common sense, but I have had people that have downloaded my free e-guide and say, this isn't sustainable, we have to turf out all our other things and buy these products. And that, of course, is not what I'm meaning at all. I'm just suggesting that once you do finish the products in your pantry, to replace them with more sustainable options. And some of those I do cover in that free e-guide. And of course, you can get that e-guide at simpleswaps.lauratrotter.com to get 10 simple swaps to eco-fy your pantry. Okay, so there you have it. I would love to hear just what you think about Himalayan rock salt. If it's in your kitchen, if it's not in your kitchen, if you're going to change what salt you eat after listening to this episode. So yeah, get in touch and let me know. And in the meantime, go out there and have a bit of fun making green mainstream. Catch you later.
Thanks for listening to the EcoChat podcast. I'm Laura Trotter. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love you to subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review in iTunes. And if you're keen to continue the conversation, head on over to my website, lauratrotter.com, where you can also pick up your free copy of my e-guide, 11 Steps to Eco-Fi Your Home and Your Life. Catch you there.